Good morning and welcome to the Project Joy radio show. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
Well, it's March 7th and we have an assignment from yesterday to look at.
All right.
Which is, be kind. Everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. Today, see if you can recognize the hard battle being fought by everyone you meet. Hint, notice eyes, body language, and the set of the mouth. Look to life to provide the support necessary to bring unconditional love to all, especially if there's a hard battle being fought by the person reading this assignment. What can you sense from being aware of your eyes, your body language, and the set of your mouth?
Well, that's it, isn't it?
Well, I'm going to see if we can pick up from our last caller, Sherry, who we didn't have much time to talk to yesterday. So here's Brad.
Oh, all right. Oh, very good.
Morning, Brad.
Hey, Brad.
Wow. How about that? That's very cool. Thank you.
Magic.
That is magic. You know, I guess what yesterday's assignment reminds me of so much, in addition to kind of what you see in other people, is just the compassion dealing with other people with what issues they're going through. Obviously, that compassion is developed from my own experience of knowing that same angst as well, and that same process of suffering and that same dealing with tough processes. For example, my mom. Just for a little minor content, getting divorced after 50 years because my dad has been unfaithful. It's such a late stage in her life. You know, this is obviously a very hard thing for her, and I can't fix her. You know, all I can do is try to just be there of support for her in any way I can, I suppose.
Just offer that unconditional love.
Yeah, and it's so obvious now to me how much my conditioning comes from her in terms of how I see her dealing with the situation. And as well, with my practice, how I have tried to avoid getting in there and trying to tell her what's going to be best for her.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of those great helpful places in practice, isn't it, Brad? I was actually just looking at this very subject this morning. The commitment to, I watch how I am with something, with somebody. You know, I think either end of the continuum, somebody that we really do care about or somebody that we're pretty conditioned not to care about. And what do I want to say to them? And then to have the discipline, truly, to follow it back and realize I don't know what's going on with them. I can know that they're a struggling, suffering human being as I am. And then what does that say about me? What I want them to know and what I want them to do and what's right for them. Okay, let's bring it back here where it originated and probably – has tremendous application.
Yeah, because if I can trace it back to myself and practice with that, then I can get to the perspective of realizing that ultimately that there's nothing wrong and hopefully will not be then projecting those things onto the other person. Again, because we don't know.
That's right. And the thing that we do know about ourselves is that we tend to grow and change when we get ourselves into a place in life, which it never seems like we got ourselves into it. It seems like life got us into it. But we find ourselves in a place where the old ways of doing and being don't work. And so we have to let go. We're required to let go. And then when we do and we look back on that, we're deeply grateful for all of that letting go and the changes that have happened, right? And then when we get to this place, and especially if we're seeing somebody we love in that point of struggle, we just want to save them. right? We just don't want them to have to go through that experience that we know has been so valuable for us.
Yeah, it's tough as you're saying that conditioning is you know, nibbling at my ear. You know, the tough part with my mom's karma is she was not happy necessarily in the marriage, but now she's not happy that he's not there. So it's like, you know, heads you lose, tails you lose.
Yes.
Either way, it's a process of suffering. And, you know, when you mentioned that a lot of us have to change, I see a lot of times with people that they can't get to that point, or that they don't even have a will and a conscience that that's even possible, you know?
Yes. It's one of those where who knows, but we can say not in this lifetime.
Yeah.
And we don't know. You know, if we could have looked at the karma that is Brad now, the karma that's Sherry, say, Ashwini, if we could look back at that karma 4 or 5 lifetimes ago, what might that person who was living in the karma then, what were they struggling with? What were they seeing? How were they growing and changing? Because they were, although it might not have looked that way to whomever was in their life and had said the "this is how you should be" different perspective on them, if that isn't too complex to follow, right? And so here we are looking at ourselves and people in our lives. And, you know, if we have a moment of clarity or honesty, there are probably things that we could either kind of jokingly or half seriously say, not in this lifetime. I don't see myself letting go of that in this lifetime. Now, maybe I will, maybe I won't, but there are those places where we know we've been getting a lot of information that says, you need to let this go. And we can anyway.
Yes. One last thing with that. In pertaining to Buddhism, then, with Zen, if it is a matter of working on this karma in another incarnation or some other way, what's the guarantee that you'll eventually come back to Zen or find a path to continue to progress with that?
None. None. That's why.
That's not encouraging.
That's why the Buddha was so emphatic, because in you know what the Buddha taught was rebirth. He did not teach reincarnation, and so what he said emphatically is there is no separate soul that is going along doing this, which is was you know counter to the religion that he grew up in. And so he was very emphatic that this is the opportunity. If you get it in this lifetime, that this is the one and only opportunity that you will ever have to find liberation, then it really behooves the person to do whatever is required to do that. Because is there a guarantee? No. In fact, I don't know if this is true. I don't know if any of this is true, okay? But one of the places that most resonates at a really deep level is the notion that to realize the opportunity that a particular lifetime is to awaken, to give up, to let go ego and make a different choice, to know that and not choose it is a really not good karmic choice. Because what we're in essence saying is, I know I could be free, but I choose ego. And making that kind of almost, if we're honest, it is a conscious choice. I would rather indulge these feelings, I'd rather cling to these beliefs than be free. Then a choice for ego is a choice for suffering.
Yes. One last quick thing that dropped in for me last Saturday. The mentor told me not to focus on how ego tells me life should be, but to focus on what is. And although that is a very simple expression, for someone who practices, I find that rather profound. So that's what's resonating with me lately, and I'm going with it.
Brad, I would add to that, the importance for us as practitioners is to realize I never actually know what is. Which takes me back to one of my very favorite religious sayings that is not definitely not a part of Buddhism, but could be, and it is, thy will be done. So whether we think of thy as a separate God creator, or thy is just life unfolding, the intelligence that animates, that acknowledgement that that I don't know, I don't have the big picture, I probably never will, and so surrendering to what is truly an act of faith, because I know I don't actually know what is.
Right.
You know what I mean by that?
I do, and I find what happens is ego wants to get in the way and say, well, there's a progression to this where you go from point A to point B, and it seems in my practice I always realize, no, I just need to be here at point A and get out of the head. Really.
Whatever point A is, right? Because, again, in a month, your mother could be happy, truly happy for the first time in her life.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
We could look at what is, but we don't have the whole picture of what is. Because what is not just my little perspective in this moment, what I can grasp and understand and put together. What is the entire universe.
Yeah. And how can you put that in a glass? Exactly.
So. Just can't do.
No.
But we can smile.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Keeping it up with a smile. All right.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much.
All thank
right.
you, Brad.
Really appreciate it. You got it.
Bye-bye. Oh, yeah. Pleasure.
Thank you, Brad. You know, that conversation we could take to so many different places, Sherry. But I wanted to pick up on one thing and underline it, which is that place of we never know what the context is because the context is the entire universe.
Yes.
And what we want, our attitude of mind is, thy will be done, in the sense of, I don't want to engage any mental process or any process that tries to define what is, because that
yes,
that is a limited perspective. And the suffering is always what is not, is the only process I want to let go. So it's not that I want to know what is, or I know what is, but I certainly don't want to go with what is not or what it should be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right? Yes. So what you're pointing out that's so important is any conversation, even
yes.
a conversation about what is
yes.
the same process.
Yes.
So and back to, you know, that little thing of you get up in the morning and you say, okay, whatever. And at night, your last thought is, oh, well, right? Because we really don't know. And if we are aligned with the intelligence that animates, the unconditional love that is us, then we realize that all that's happening here is we get an opportunity to have a front row seat as life unfolds. And to live
yes.
in thank you.
And because life is the unknown, it's not the known. And so front row seat
mm-hmm.
implies being in the process of not knowing, which brings
yes.
me to that other point you made with Brad, which I think is so important, that there's one choice, which is I choose ego or I choose life. I choose
mm-hmm.
to awaken or not awaken. And
mm-hmm.
that's a process, right, that if it's one thing if you're working on or practicing with making the choice for life versus the choice for ego, but if you know and you have a practice, because lots of people will just go to, I don't know how to choose life over ego. Well, in that's one case in point, but it's a process of choosing life versus ego, right?
Yes, and the piece of that I think you're pointing at is, that's going on whether we know it or not.
Yes.
Right? So we are inexorably drawn to awakening whether we realize it or not. And what we fail to realize, I think, often is that all of these things that ego doesn't want are the very things, as we're fond of saying, we have to encounter what we need to transcend. So ego is saying, no, I don't want that, no, I don't want that, no, I don't want that. But these are, we're simply coming up to the next obstacle on the path to awakening. If we say, oh good, this is an old one. So how can we say yes to this and be here for the clarity that life is going to offer to clean this up, to untie the knot, as the Buddha phrased it, then there we go. And if we hit these places from a completely unconscious place and we just run smack into them and hate every minute of it, and if somebody said gratitude, we'd smack them, it doesn't matter. The process is the same. We are still moving along the path to awakening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just whether we're having a good time of it or not.
It seems to me. Yeah, that's the point. Is it fun or is it misery? And that's the difference between yes and no.
Yeah. Okay, well, here's our next caller.
All right, thank you.
You're not live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rita.
Hey, Rita.
Hi.
If you could get stopped for just a second, because there's a lot of background noise.
Oh, I thought my earbuds in.
That's fine. It's just, I think moving with earbuds is the challenge.
Okay, I wasn't moving, but I will be even more still.
There you go, because you sound fine now.
Okay, good. I have a situation where there's, going along with the assignment, that there's a difficult situation with a family member, and I wanted to ask you at the chance of getting too personal, if you were in the same situation of, you know, your daughter saying she wants to commit suicide and she's got this disease and it's going crazy and she's, to me, completely in conditioned mind. And you were also in that situation when you were young. What would you want your parents to do?
Well, hypothetical questions can only have hypothetical answers. And they're completely useless. So here's what I would encourage you toward.
Okay.
The greatest gift that we can give ourselves and everyone in our lives is to know experientially that there is nothing wrong.
Okay.
When we know that, so if we were, if this were a theistic, is that the word? Yeah. If this were a God-oriented orientation to life, then we would say things like, there is nothing that isn't happening within the presence of God. There is nothing that can happen to anybody that God is not in charge of. Okay? So some religions will say, whatever, it's God's will. It's God's will. It's God's will. We don't do that. Okay? And so what we're left with is a realization, which is what we are working toward in practice, that this is a non-separate reality. There is nothing in this reality that is not the intelligence that animates all form. When you know that, there is peace. And we lose the desire to focus on other people as if the issue that we're suffering with is because of them and not because of us. Until then, we are just stuck in this, well, but if this is true, and this is what we were talking about with Brad. Well, this is real. This is what is. And it is a problem, and what do I do about it? Okay, that is the orientation of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. And there is no solution to any of our life, in quotes, problems within that context, because that context is the problem. When we step beyond that into the non-separate nature of all that is, we realize life is unfolding as it is unfolding. There is nothing that is separate. As I think it's Julian of Norwich or whatever her name was, all is well, all is well, and all is always well, whatever that quote is, which I'll look up later today. Okay? That realization that everything is in God's hands and there is no problem, and our job is to realize that.
I don't know. I guess I feel, I hear that. I understand it. I still feel.
If you could speak up just a little bit, you're very far away.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Is this better, Sherry?
Yeah.
Okay. Unconditional love. Okay, I have unconditional love for this person. And if it's God's will that she is experiencing what she is experiencing,
well,
it's
not. If we go in that direction, then we get all wacky. No, it's not believing that anyone is inadequate or unequal to their life.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
Yeah. We've talked about that, and I see that, and I see that there's, you know, probably a big lesson for her here.
No, but Rita, here's the deal. In this practice, we don't focus on her. There's a big lesson for you here. There's a big lesson for you. When you leave you, when you go to conditioned mind, and you get all involved in the stories about that this is about her, that's where it all goes into unfortunate places. The opportunity is for you. Can you get to a place of unconditional love? Can you get to a place of realization that there is nothing wrong? That's your practice opportunity.
Well, it hit me the other night that there is no problem, and I felt completely calm and relieved.
So
I
that's the point of practice.
There. Okay.
That's the point of practice. So you know that experience, and in practice, that's what we do. We realize that experience exists. Now, how do you give attention there instead of giving attention to the karmically conditioned stories of, oh, my God?
Well, it's difficult to see her suffering.
Well, yes, it is. Of course it is. But it's not her suffering that's the problem, Rita. If you weren't suffering, you would not notice, you would not be projecting her suffering. The assumption is that what we believe about what people are experiencing is what they are experiencing. And that is not true. So the suffering that you're experiencing is yours. That's the suffering that you have a chance to let go, to see through. The karma that you can clean up, that is the gift that you can give to the world. That is the best that you can do. Okay?
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I've got my focus.
Good. Excellent. Excellent.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rita.
Bye-bye.
You know, Sherry, it's just so important for us to get. I think we were looking at this earlier where with Brad, and then in the context of the larger practice, right, that we're giving up attachments to all positions. And that's the hardest thing for us to do, that attachment to the way we see is what we have to give up in order to see differently.
Yes. Yes.
And
I have to let go of this tunnel vision in order to have a larger perspective.
Right. And that place of, yes, there's somebody who I love who is having an issue, and then to be able to do what you were talking to Brad about, which is to follow that back and see how it is, the suffering is happening in me, so I can let go of that. And when I let go of that, there's a possibility that from a place of peace, we could do something about if that is what is available from life to respond to someone who suffers, if that's actually something that we have to do, coming from a place of adequacy and compassion, not coming from a place of my suffering.
Yes, and the quickest trip, this sounds harsh to people who have a different orientation to life, but we realize that all that's going on in these situations is my ego.
Yes.
I mean, terrible things are happening to people's children all over the world. And if somebody is 95 years old and is suffering, that's still somebody's child. Okay? And so when it's my child, then suddenly all the rules change. And this is important, and this is what I have to focus on. And then what tends to happen to us is that when my personal crisis is over, then I forget all about the fact that suffering is a universal condition of conditioned people.
Yes.
So that, and you know, when I suffer because I love somebody, that's an opening for me to realize I'm suffering over my attachment to this one particular human being. Okay, that is a deep, deep opportunity to look at suffering, attachment, ego, beliefs, assumptions, rejections. My gosh, it's just the best workshop in the world. And mm-hmm. then we need to extrapolate.
Yes. Well, and what you're pointing at, right, Sherry, is the bamboozle, which is what conditioning interprets that to be is to stop loving. Well, no, we're actually opening to love and letting go the attachment and the suffering. We're letting go the ego in the process, not
we're letting go
attachment,
yes, and the object.
Yes, and
right?
The object.
We're learning to love
the ego.
Yeah, we're learning to love unconditionally, not just love somebody. It's what were we talking about yesterday? The love, the lowercase love and the uppercase love, right?
Yes.
And so the lowercase love opens us to the possibility of the uppercase love, the universal love. So we go from the specific, the I, me, my love, attachment, to a universal, so that we see all people as our children. We see all creatures as the creature that I love. We see all of nature as the same as the part of nature that I'm attached to. So we have an opening to move into a very broad relationship through a singular relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to me, the most incredible place we awaken to is that everything is awakening to itself, right? There's no external force that is acting on me in order, or anyone or anything. In other words, that perspective of non-separation that you started out with is, it's not like a person who is inadequate is having an experience they cannot stand, but every node of intelligence is in some way waking up to itself as intelligence, and that perspective is what allows us to move to that place of adequacy and compassion for the person's experience.
Yeah. And respect and admiration.
Respect,
which is what
admiration.
Today's quote is about, right? Because people
yes.
are struggling with big stuff, and they're doing
yes.
it. And that takes us to a place of respect and admiration and gratitude and, just cheering. You know, it's the Japanese. It's what the Japanese yell at a race, right? Do your best, do your best, do your best, right? It's not about winning and losing. It's about everybody doing their best. And when mm-hmm. we realize everybody is doing their best, then all we want to do is cheer them on, not become
yes.
a stumbling block for them, because now as they're racing along, they got to take care of me because
yes.
I'm so worried about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's that time, Sharon, really brings it's such a beautiful segue to today's focus, which says, if you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion.
Wow, that kind of makes it simple, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Is there a way
so today,
to go with that? You got a little assignment?
Yes. Today, explore what compassion is for you. Recall times when you have felt compassion for another. Remember times when you felt compassion from another. Can you sense how compassion withheld leads to unhappiness and compassion given leads to happiness? Record and listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Compassion
is the equivalent of the uppercase love. Compassion
yes.
has nothing to do with the lowercase love.
Which, and the way I was going to say that is, remember, compassion is not suffering for others.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Right? In that sense of,
yeah.
I'm not agonizing about what you're experiencing.
Right. I'm finding the place that's unconditional for us all.
Yes. Yes.
That's
or if I celebrate your, yeah, from the perspective of I celebrate the adequacy in you, what is the best thing I can do to assist?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And often it may be leave you alone.
That's right. Or take care of me.
Take care of me, right? Yeah. All right.
Thank you,
Sherry.
Thank you, Sherry. This was a really profound radio show. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of I wouldn't be surprised if some people got some things stirred up in this conversation, because it's a very threatening conversation for ego. So,
well, we have another radio show tonight, so bring it up.
That's right. People
bring it
call
up
into open air, and we can continue to talk about it. Good point. Thank you again, Ashwini. Thank you, everybody.
Take care.